The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via video conference by Judges Greenberg and Jaquith. And we're considering the matter of Martin D. Spiner III versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Docket number 22-2636. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Good morning. My name is Justin Pollard. I'm for the veteran appellant Martin Spiner with co-counsel Lila Kanofsky.
Thank you, Mr. Pollard and Ms. Kanofsky.
For the secretary, Brian Carey, and with me today is Carolyn Washington.
Thank you, Mr. Carey and Ms. Washington. As you know, each party will have 30 minutes to present arguments. Mr. Pollard, what amount of time would you like to reserve?
I would like to reserve 10 minutes, please.
Okay, very good. And Mr. Pollard, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. And may it please the court. The board erred in failing to accept appellant's evidence at the October 2021 board hearing because under 38 U.S.C. section 7113B, a claimant is afforded the right to submit evidence at a board hearing. The term submit is not defined in the statute, and therefore the common definition is applied. And that dictionary definition of the word submit means to propose or refer to another for review. Here, appellant sent documents to VA in preparation for the hearing 1 week prior for review and discussion of that evidence at the hearing. Therefore, he intended to have those documents submitted for review at the hearing. This is a limited issue of whether Congress intended to restrict how a claimant may submit evidence at a hearing. In denying the submission of
appellant's evidence, Mr. Pollard, was there anything in that September 29, 2021 submission that indicated that that was the veteran's intent or purpose?
His intent and purpose as to what, Your Honor?
His intent and purpose as to how those materials would be handled. What would happen?
I think there's evidence in the record that, you know, suggests that that was indeed his intent to have that evidence reviewed. There was a correspondence that occurred about a day prior to his submission where he found out from interaction with the VA that his hearing was indeed scheduled. And he stated that he had no knowledge of that hearing. And then as the next day, in response to that notification, he submitted this evidence for review. So it's more than reasonable to assume that once he got notification of the hearing, which was about a week prior, that's when he decided to upload those documents on September 29th.
Mr. Pollard, a question about the facts here, because neither brief addressed this. So he was scheduled for 3 hearings and he ended up, I'll say, participating in the last. I won't say attending because I'm not really sure what kind of hearing it was. So did he get the first notice of the May? Eventually scheduled for May.
Right. The record, when you review the record, it seems that it was one scheduling after another, then after another. So it's unclear whether he received proper notice of the first scheduled hearing, but it seems like he would. Maybe he did. I'm not really certain whether he did or not. However, the VA rescheduled the hearing almost right after that first one for August.
Of its own accord, it rescheduled.
Yes.
He never reached out. Okay.
Right. He never requested for rescheduling.
Okay. I'm sorry, what did you just say?
I'm pretty sure he did not request the rescheduling after the first one.
And is it the same circumstance for the hearing that was eventually scheduled for August 2021?
Well, from that interaction and that correspondence that I referenced to earlier, it seemed that he was unaware of the hearing for October 5th. For the other scheduled hearing, I'm not sure, because that was, once again, I think he didn't have any knowledge of that. And there are records indicating that the information wasn't accurate as to his contacts in the record as well.
Okay, so let's move. So for the May and the hearings that were scheduled for May and August, he wasn't aware of them, have never asked for them to be rescheduled. Now, the hearing that actually occurred in October, did he go to the Columbia Regional Office, or did he the language that's used in the board hearing transcript is a little unclear. Did he actually go to the Columbia RO for that hearing?
No, I'm pretty sure it was a virtual hearing and that was a lot of the basis of what the arguments are, you know, founded upon.
Right. Virtual meaning he's at home.
Right.
And the board member is somewhere else. And this is not like a video conference hearing where the veteran shows up at the regional office. This is something totally different. What's your understanding about why this different measure was taken in this case?
I'm pretty sure it was due to COVID. This was during a time where the regional offices were closed, and VA and the rest of the world didn't want interaction between people. So therefore, it was highly suggested and recommended, and I don't even think he was allowed to attend an actual hearing at a VA facility. So therefore, it was a virtual hearing. He was presumably at his house, and that's what happened, just like we're conducting this.
So the two options that the statute and the regulation provide for instances where there's a hearing were not available to Mr. Spiner.
Yeah, because he initially requested a hearing at a VA office, which would have afforded him more access in the conventional way to submit evidence by him bringing the evidence there. So he didn't, by doing this virtual session, he didn't think that he had the ability, perhaps, to upload this evidence during the hearing or carry evidence with him. So he didn't really have the means, and nowhere did VA give him the information or the notice stating, like, if you want to submit evidence at a hearing, this is how you would go about doing it. Uh-huh. That was never proposed to him.
A further question, and I think you just answered it, but the letter that he received when the October hearing was scheduled told him he could submit evidence, told him he had two options. He could provide that evidence at the hearing, or he could submit it within 90 days after the hearing, right? But it did not mention how he was to... And okay, so a question. We've already established both of those options were not available to him because he was totally off site. I mean, presumably, if he were on site at the Columbia VA regional office having a normal, what we call normal video conference hearing, he could hand over some papers.
Absolutely. I mean, and that was most likely the customary way, probably when the statute was written, of how they were anticipating hearings to be conducted. That, you know, at the hearing usually means a person would go to, and if they have evidence, they would bring that evidence with them, and then they would, you know, submit it. But he didn't really have or wasn't afforded that opportunity here, and nor was he informed of a way where he could submit evidence at this hearing virtually.
Mr. Pollard, does the VA's October 1st, 2021 report of general information accurately reflect that the veteran requested postponement of the October 2021 hearing because he had new and relevant material to add to his records for consideration?
I'm not sure, because that is a writing by a VA employee. Whatever the claimant was trying to convey there was most likely through a conversation where he stated, "I had evidence that I wanted to submit." No, appellant is not an attorney. He's not going to know the difference between new and relevant evidence, or what the what the intent for that evidence should be, or where he should file it. Presumably, he had a conversation with the VA employee, stated, "I have evidence that I want to submit at this hearing," because that's what he was informed of. When it comes to the details of new and relevant evidence and that, I don't think that should have any bearing upon what his intent was when it comes to a filing as per a VA regulation. I think he was just trying to convey that he has evidence. Hold on, I want to submit it here. And they're like, okay, you can submit it, but he doesn't know how to at a virtual hearing. And they're telling him this hearing is virtual. So just like any reasonable person would do, let me give the board access to this information so we can discuss this evidence at the hearing. And when he gets to the hearing, there's no information telling him like how to go about uploading or presenting this evidence to the board during the hearing. So I think that's the more reasonable interpretation of that report of general information is just the veteran stating, I would like to have information before the board at this hearing. How do I do that? And no one really gave him a solid answer. So he probably requested, can I reschedule? And that was never followed through with either. And they just continued with the hearing.
Using the Merriam-Webster definition of submit that you propose, how did the veteran or his representative present the medical evidence that had been transmitted to VA on September 29th at the hearing?
Okay, so at the hearing, that evidence was introduced by the board. The board preemptively stated, you have this evidence that was just uploaded or just submitted to VA, and I can't see it. So even if the veteran was going to make a overt, say, hey, I want to have this evidence submitted, or even reference that, the veteran or a representative, the board preemptively cut all of that opportunity off, stating that there's evidence here. You can't submit. I can't review this evidence unless you submit it 90 days thereafter. So right there, that evidence is introduced. That evidence was discussed. The contents of the evidence is discussed. So
why didn't the veteran or his representative actually ask the board member to consider the evidence?
Because they were probably not aware of what law was relevant here. I mean, these are two people who are not attorneys, and therefore they probably were just following the instruction of the hearing officer, stating that this is not submitted. In the inverse, you can ask the question, why didn't the hearing officer say, do you want this evidence submitted? And if he did say that, it probably would have just went submitted, and it wouldn't have been a question. We probably wouldn't be here, because they would have just been accepted into the board. The board would have reviewed that evidence and made a decision upon it. But since the board limited its review and evaluation of that evidence to only the section where it was 90 days thereafter, the board didn't address the relevant issue of, well, is this actually submitted here? Because I have this evidence in my hand. We're discussing this evidence. So what keeps that from being a submission under the plain language of submission according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary?
I have two questions, if I may. I'd like you to focus a bit on some facts. As I understand it, the member of the board actually mentioned prior treatment records and, quote, some VA records, unquote, in the discussion with the veteran at the hearing. Is that true?
Yeah, according to the record there, that's what the hearing officer referred to.
All right. So that would suggest that the hearing officer had records, which, at least in a superficial way, he addressed. Is that correct?
Yes, I think so.
Now, I think there is a statutory, certainly a regulatory requirement, but I think it's a statute that requires the member of the board to make themselves knowledgeable about the entire file before the hearing so that they can assist the veteran in perfecting the appeal. Is there any evidence that the board member did that here?
That he reviewed the entire file?
Yes.
I'm not sure if the...
Do you agree with my proposition that there's a statutory requirement that the board member familiarize themselves with the entire file before the hearing so that they can assist the veteran?
I think the regulation you're referring to is 38 CFR section 2705. So section 7 does refer to determining whether that documentary evidence would be redundant or if there would be a material issue that is lacking. So yes, that is one of the hearing officer's responsibilities.
Is there any evidence, again, to suggest that the hearing officer did that here?
Yeah, I think that when the board had knowledge, the hearing officer had knowledge of that evidence, I would assume so, yes.
Well, no. I'm not asking you to assume anything. What is there in the record, however it's constructed, that would suggest that this particular hearing examiner did, in fact, review the file in order to assist the veteran in perfecting his appeal? I don't see any.
Maybe that's the correct answer because I can't refer to any as well.
All right. Would that be another defect in these procedures?
Well, yeah, if it would be if the hearing officer did not execute their duties as was supposed to be executed, yes.
You believe that's sufficient for the court to act, at least to send it back for further proceedings? That alone. You've made four arguments. Right.
Well, yes, if the hearing officer did not perform his or her duties according to what they were supposed to, that would be a part of it. And encompassed within that duty, if I may say so, would also be to inform a claimant upon their options of, do you want to have this evidence submitted under at the hearing as well? That can also be incorporated into a hearing officer duty if the hearing officer didn't review the entire record as they were supposed to assist the veteran as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Pollard, why didn't the representative resubmit the evidence as she seemed to indicate she would?
Okay. In all candor, when I was spoken with the veteran, he informed me that he relied upon the representative because, as the record indicates, he's very sick. And he said that wasn't his top priority, was handling this. He's battling multiple types of cancers. And he relied upon his representative to submit that evidence. And the representative, from what he informed me, failed to do so. So that is the reason why he did not submit that within that 90-day period. And also is, if that would answer your question.
Is your fair process contention that the veteran didn't receive adequate notice that his September 2021 submission would not be considered?
Yeah, part of that fair process is multifaceted because initially when he opted into RAM, he was never informed that he would be subject to certain evidentiary windows. If he stayed under AMA, he could submit evidence at any time. At no point do I recall that those notifications said, oh, you will be permitted to submit evidence, but only in this particular time. And that's kind of significant considering between the AOJ denial and between the time on the hearing, this could be almost 3 years, if I remember. So we have 3 years of medical records, and who knows when he was thinking at the time when he opted into it. He was just given this opportunity of, oh, okay, I'm going to expedite my process. I'm a sick person. Let me get this through. And he opted into RAMP 2018, 5 years ago, And when he opted into RAD, it would never inform him like, okay, so now you can't submit evidence from here to here until after the fact, after he received those notifications. Then those notifications within themselves were misleading or confusing because they gave him different dates. They said, hey, this is a AMA appeal. And he's like, well, what would an AMA appeal be to a lay person, the difference between that and RAMP? And they had different scheduling requirements, different schedules of these board hearings. And I think what's also significant that the language of one of those hearings stated that if you submit this on the date your hearing is scheduled, he submitted technically this evidence within 90 days from the date that his hearing was scheduled. However, it was rescheduled again. And so if he simply followed the instructions that VA gave him, and now is confusing in terms of VA stating, do this, do this, do this, do this, without any clear indication of what he was supposed to do until the final decision that comes in, or all these subsequent notifications that kept changing his instructions. I'm sorry, Judge, I cannot hear you.
Thank you. That fact I find very significant. And this goes back to the question that I was asking you earlier about what actually happened here. Did he not appear for the September hearing? The August 2021 hearing? Or did VA itself cancel the hearing?
It's not clear from the record.
The regulation 20.203, appeals with request for a board hearing talk about submitting evidence and when you can submit that. But really, C only covers the situation where the appellant does not appear for a hearing and then says, and the hearing is not rescheduled. Here, it doesn't seem like he meets the requirement that he did not appear. So it's almost like there's no regulation to cover this circumstance because...
Right. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, that's why we kind of forward this argument under fair process, as because it's not, the regulations weren't clear. They weren't really even drafted at the time. So it was unclear. So this process of how he was supposed to submit this evidence was kind of just unclear throughout this beginning of him opting into RAMP.
Uh-huh. But you do not know whether he did not appear for the September hearing, either because he wasn't aware it was happening or he just didn't show up, or whether VA preemptively canceled it. Do you know the answer? The August. I'm talking about the August hearing.
Right. I think he was a no-show at the August 2021 hearing because he didn't receive notice of that hearing. I think that's what the correspondence between appellant and the VA indicates, if I'm reading that correctly, that he didn't appear because he didn't receive the notice that it was happening at that time.
And so they didn't preemptively cancel that or due to COVID.
I'm not sure, but I would think so. It could be. I can't answer that completely.
All right. Thank you.
My time is up. Is there any, does anybody have any further questioning?
Judge Greenberg, do you have any questions?
No.
Judge Jaquith, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pollard.
Thank you.
And Mr. Carey, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Section 7113B of the AMA provides very clear limitations to the manner and time frame in which a veteran may submit evidence for board review. And the court should reject appellant's interpretation of the provision which would require the board to review evidence submitted prior to the board hearing, which would otherwise be unreviewable merely because that evidence was then noted at the hearing, as that interpretation would be inconsistent with the language, purpose, and structure of the AMA, and it would also render that statutory provision meaningless as a practical matter.
Well, wait a minute. Also, just a minute. Sorry, Chief.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Where in the statute do you find that statement reflected, counsel?
Sorry, what statement, Your Honor?
Yep, the statement you just made.
That it clearly limits the...
Yes. Where I'm looking at 7113. Where there does it preclude the submission as you stated it?
Well, in using the several canons of statutory construction, Your Honor, to include the presumption that Congress uses terms consistently throughout a statute, that where Congress uses a particular term, a particular language in one part of the law, but omits it in another part, that is a deliberate omission, and that if there is a clear alternative language that Congress could have used, then it would have used it. And those all apply here. So first and foremost, within Section 7113 is the phrase shall be limited. And as this court found in Cook, that language does not provide the board with any discretion to review evidence outside of that that prescribed window. And thus, had Congress provided such discretion, that would accommodate the very circumstances in this case, that the board would not have to review such evidence, but could take circumstances in consideration and have the discretion to review such evidence. So that's one, I think, very clear indication that Congress did not intend for the scope of the evidence before the board to extend to evidence submitted prior to the hearing, but referenced at the hearing.
If I may, so your reference to that particular section, which I believe is B, little b, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. So that for the court would be a matter of what did Congress intend by that statutory provision. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
With regard to that, we're asked to make a determination of statutory construction along those lines. How is that consistent with the overall scheme of congressional intent to give the maximum availability of judicial review or administrative review to this special class of litigant, of veterans?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that we'll try to be brief, but it is important to then address the purpose and structure of the statute, as the court has done in several recent cases. And again, the purpose was to streamline the broken legacy system, which was broken in part because of the frequent and unlimited submission of evidence. And in doing so, Congress created the system that deliberately served to limit the evidentiary record before the board, while still providing the option of different review options, to include the supplemental claim, which provides for review of the entire record, as well as includes the duty to assist. And then, of course, if a veteran files a supplemental claim after the board decision, it can protect the earliest possible effective date. So Congress took into account the due process rights of veterans in ensuring that they did have the opportunity, they do have the opportunity to have all evidence reviewed in a timely manner, but because of the inherent or the problems in the legacy system that the AMA was intended to address, as part of that overall system, the evidentiary record before the board is intended to be limited. And if we were to hear, similar to as the court found in Aviles Rivera, if we were to extend that to evidence between the AOJ decision and the board hearing, which in this case would be the entirety of the record up until the board hearing, that would essentially render that provision meaningless. So the provision exists for a reason. It is to limit the evidentiary record before the board, which I think is very clearly indicated in the statutory language. And it is works.
Doesn't the legislative history reflect Congress's expression, exhortation, admonition that the restrictions are to be interpreted reasonably?
Your Honor, I believe that, that what the legislative history shows is that, yes, Congress still intended for this to be a veteran-friendly system, and that that is how the overall AMA is structured with those various options, but that in particular here, with respect to the limited, with respect to this particular language, I am not aware of legislative history explaining why that specific language. But and again, in the overall intent and purpose of the AMA, which Congress has recognized to provide a streamlined system to limit the evidentiary record before the board, in contrast to in the legacy system, that in establishing a provision which is very clearly indicated shall be limited to, that Congress is creating a bright line rule here, and that there is no discretion to consider evidence outside of that time frame.
If the board was not going to consider the nearly 800 pages of medical records the veteran submitted in September of 2021, why did the VA send the veteran a letter acknowledging their receipt and saying, we have added these documents to your electronic file and they now will be available for future interactions with VA?
Well, Your Honor, that can apply towards any interactions with VA. And I think it's worth noting,
including a board hearing.
It could, yes, Your Honor. That would be a subset, but that is prohibited by Section 7113B for board review. So it may exist in Mr. Spiner's record, but again, the particular statutory provision limits board review. That would not limit review, for example, in a supplemental claim. And I think it is noteworthy here that Mr. Spiner had submitted a supplemental claim specifically for esophageal cancer. And again, the diagnosis before the board was cancer of the tonsil, that claim stream. So he had filed a supplemental claim in August 2019. That was denied in a June 2019 rating decision. And he had the option of continuing to pursue that claim stream or that appeal stream with supplemental claims, with the submission of evidence, with the duty to assist, such that the regional office or the AOJ would have to consider that evidence properly. And while we were not notifying the court previously because we have just come across it, but he has since filed a supplemental claim in October 2022 after the board decision, after appeal to the court, and that has been adjudicated and denied. So we don't see any issues of mootness. I would be happy to, again, provide that information to the court if the court requires. But what that shows is that the system is working, and he had the opportunity to have that evidence in his record reviewed under different lanes, and subsequently it has been reviewed.
Mr. Carey, which claim are you referring to there?
So there is the
Said there was a recent decision on a supplemental claim, what claim was that?
For esophageal cancer,
Your Honor. Esophageal. Oh, okay.
Yes. So again, there's that's a factual distinction why we see those two claim stream, because the claim before the board, which can be broadly characterized as neck cancer, I believe, it was specifically for the diagnosis of cancer, the tonsil. An appellant is trying to have the records that he believes are, he has asserted, relate to esophageal cancer specifically for consideration by the board. But again, he had pursued that separate claim and could have done so and continued to pursue that claim. So again, he had a variety of options that the AMA has provided him. He took advantage of them to a certain extent.
Mr. Carey.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I want to follow the line of questioning that I ask Mr. Pollard. And that is, so the statute regulation provide essentially two options for someone who wants to submit evidence, who goes on the board hearing lane. Is that correct?
So two options, meaning at the board hearing and within 90 days following the board hearing? Is that what, yes, to what you're,
yes,
referring?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that is what the letter that informed him about the scheduling of the October hearing mentioned, that he had two options. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may read it, if your appeal is an AMA appeal, you may only submit evidence at the hearing or within 90-day window following the scheduled hearing date.
Okay. So now, Mr. Spiner did not, Mr. Pollard indicated that he thought that Mr. Spiner did not have the opportunity to go to the Columbia VA regional office for a video conference hearing, that he had what I think VA is calling a teleconference hearing. And so he was not on site at the Columbia VA regional office, and he certainly wasn't in Washington, D.C. for the hearing.
We disagree with that reading of the facts, Your Honor. Like, from the record, while not absolute, the record very strongly indicates that he attended from the Columbia, South Carolina regional office. The notification letters indicate that that is where they were scheduled. They indicate
Are you saying you actually don't know?
I have been informed that it was from our records, but even from the outside of the case record, but and certainly the fact that the assertion that it was purely virtual due to COVID is speculation. But even in the record before the court, I believe clearly indicates, but not absolutely, it does not say that Mr. Spiner is here at the Columbia, South Carolina regional office, but that is what the scheduling letters indicated, that it was to be held at the Columbia, that regional office, and that to check in with the office to make sure it was open.
Why on R at 18 would they call it a teleconference then? Are you aware of the meaning of a teleconference?
Yes, Your Honor, because
VA's meaning of teleconference.
Yes, Your Honor. That is because it is a teleconference between the veterans law judge at the board headquarters and the VA regional office, where the veteran and his VSO representative attended.
Isn't that generally called a video conference? Was there video here?
My understanding is that
I'm just referring to R at 18, whereas normally I see in a transcript it will say video conference hearing. Right. And I believe that all documents that VA, even the notice letter that the veteran got, called it a video hearing at the Columbia office. It said there was one scheduled, but then it also said you will have the option for a teleconference where you stay at home and everything is... the veteran would not be on site at a VA regional office.
Yes, right. I see the distinction in that language.
Whenever R at 18 says there was a tele hearing, I mean, my assumption would be that they were using the same language that was used in the notice letter to him, which clearly indicated that everyone would be off site due to COVID protocol. So why are you interpreting the word telehearing on page 18 differently? And you're saying that he actually showed up when the letter to him indicated that that would be called a video hearing if he showed up at a VA regional office.
Again, I understand the distinction, Your Honor, and as I've indicated, we do not, we're not asserting absolutely that Mr. Spiner attended at the VA regional office, but we think that the other evidence of record suggests that he did so, to include that it is a telehearing at the VA regional office. And so that's,
it does not say is, at the our, VA, it does not say at the VA regional offices with the Columbia VA regional office.
Yes, Your Honor. It does say that.
Okay. Well, you said it said at.
I stand corrected, Your Honor. Yes. It says with the VA regional office.
Okay. Well, the only reason I'm trying to make this point, and I would like you to provide us with information after this oral argument where the secretary declares what type of hearing Mr. Spiner had. The reason I'm making that, asking that question and making that point is not just for fun. It's that the statute actually and the regulation indicate that he has two options for submitting evidence when he has a board hearing. If he had a teleconference hearing, and according to the notice letter, as I've indicated, that meant that he was off-site, would he have had access to both of those opportunities?
Your Honor, if a veteran participates totally virtually, whether via telehearing or a video telehearing, there obviously isn't the same opportunity to submit evidence physically in the form of, you know, documents, either at the regional office or at the board headquarters.
So your answer is no, he did not have the opportunity, both opportunities to submit evidence.
I believe evidence can be submitted. First, as a factual matter, as an interpretation of statute, the secretary's interpretation, he is submitting evidence in the form of testimony. And so he
yes,
is.
But if he so wanted he, to submit physical evidence.
If he wanted to submit physical evidence, he can. I think that the law doesn't require the submission of the physical evidence at the board hearing.
Right. It gives him two different ways to do it.
Gives him options. And so I think it's reasonable to read the law in with both the opportunity at the board hearing, for which there might be impractical reasons for submitting certain type of evidence, but combined with the ability to submit evidence within 90 days following the board hearing, and to which Mr. Spiner, it's clear that he's able to submit evidence. And that's the window in which a veteran can submit evidence more that would be more practical in those circumstances, that wouldn't be as practical at the hearing. And so it's a matter
of your answer is no, he did not have the opportunity, the two opportunities that are at least listed in your regulation, to submit non-testimonial evidence at the hearing, if indeed he had a telehearing where he was at home and testified.
There are options. There are options such as direct upload via the VA website that, you know, in addition to mailing or faxing is one of the options that the board provides. So,
right. And all of those are options that would occur. Can we just clarify what are the two options we're talking about? Because I'm getting a sense that maybe we're talking about different options. He can actually submit evidence at the hearing, or he can submit evidence within 90 days of the hearing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. And so if he's going to be faxing and uploading and mailing, could he do that at the hearing? I mean,
I think as a practical matter, Your Honor, it would be, Technically, it could be done. I don't think practically we would see that it being done exactly the same time, but maybe addressing evidence that he intends to submit. And then again, in that 90-day window, then it could be 10 minutes later, or it could be 89 days later, to then use that opportunity to submit the evidence, which is impractical to do in the impractical to do in a purely virtual hearing. And I think that may
be he did not have the opportunity provided by the statute to submit physical evidence at the hearing, as well as evidence within 90 days after. If he had the telehearing that is referred to in the notice letter, where everyone is offsite, he did not have the opportunity. He had one opportunity, and that was to submit evidence within 90 days after.
Yes, as a practical matter, Your Honor, I believe that that is correct. For physical evidence, you would generally not have the opportunity to submit that at a purely virtual hearing. And I think that that's that could be viewed as a gap in the law. The AMA originally did not provide for a purely virtual hearing. That was amended in 2020 to add that. So, and Congress didn't otherwise address that particular maybe difficulty.
It sounds like it was unanticipated COVID style issue, right? I mean,
certainly.
They're not still offering telehearings, are they? Or are they? Where everyone's off site?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that is the option, because that is now the option as a matter of law to provide for a veteran to be able to request purely remote hearings. Again, as long as the appropriately secure technology is available. That's how the statute reads in 7107.
Okay, well, now you're really confusing me, because apparently your regulation doesn't refer to that. Your regulation makes it seem as though a veteran who wants to submit evidence and is in the board hearing lane could do so two ways, but really there's only one way. That's submit it within 90 days. If everyone's remote, how are you going to do it at the hearing? Unless you maybe hold up it page by page, you hold it up at the hearing.
Yes, I understand. We can see that the regulations do not account for that particular circumstance. But I think our argument is that it's there. And that is a gap in the regulations. But again, I think that maybe that statutory gap that we haven't filled, it's still in the provision for purely virtual hearings. One that doesn't really apply to, if there is a virtual hearing, it would apply here today.
If there's a gap in the law, though, wouldn't you normally fill that gap in the regulation? 20.302?
Normally, Your Honor, and it's not.
And is that gap filled in the regulation at all?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. But that doesn't necessarily, not a reflection on necessarily that the Secretary has deliberately addressed the gap and provided a gap filler, just that hasn't been done yet.
Well, if you haven't done it, why can't we do it and put an end to this struggle that this veteran seems to be having with the department? Do we have the power to do it? You haven't done it. This statutory scheme was under consideration for years, relentlessly pursued by the Secretary. And you're telling me there's an important gap in at least the regulatory scheme, quite apart from statutory construction. So why can't we as a court just fill the gap?
Well, so the court does have the authority to fill a gap. The court has the authority to interpret the statutory provision. And that is what Mr. Spiner is asking the court to do here today, and to interpret into 7113B the ability to submit evidence by reference to evidence submitted fairly prior to the board hearing.
Isn't there a practical and important reason to get the evidence in the hands of the fact finder when the fact finder is conducting the hearing, so that the board member can familiarize herself or himself with the evidence and actually ask the veteran questions about it?
Yes, sir. I think that would be, and that would be preferable just as a matter of practice, so that as you indicated, that the veterans law judge could then make those assessments and then maybe provide the veteran with some guidance on what, as is required in the regulations, to help substantiate the claim. But again, the law doesn't require the submission of any particular type of evidence at the board hearing, and it's not, and so it isn't the statutory purpose of the board hearing to assess the evidence and then render a decision. So that is ultimately for the board to do in the ultimate decision. So that might be preferable or desirable. It's not necessarily practical nor required. So if I may return to the language again.
Why wouldn't in this circumstance a board member say, I have 800 pages of evidence? He sort of does say that. Was submitted a week ago. If you want me to consider it, instead of saying you have to resubmit it, why doesn't he just ask, do you want to resubmit that evidence? Yes, it's resubmitted. Does it really add something to the system to require a second upload of the same 800 pages?
Certainly, Your Honor, that could appear or may appear to be more reasonable, more efficient here. But when our position is that Congress created the bright line rule, there's no violence to the bright line rule.
You're just making this just makes it harder to satisfy the line. If that exchange doesn't happen, if there's no resubmission, but there's nothing that says the resubmission has to require a second upload. Where's the efficiency in getting 800 more pages?
So we can concede that it may not appear to be efficient, but again, we would disagree that the, which is our fundamental argument here, that the 7113B and in general the provisions of the AMA don't permit for the resubmission by reference to files that are already in, that have been submitted prior to the board hearing that are otherwise unreviewable. So while that may, again, in certain circumstances like the one here, may appear to be inefficient, and maybe the court agrees that that is inefficient, but that is the policy that Congress implemented, that based on its choices of the balance between evidence review and speed of adjudication and a duty to assist, that is the line. And we do believe that that is a line where that would not permit such submission or resubmission by reference.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of ways that the line might have gotten confused here. One is that each of these three postponement letters, I take it from what you've said that you can't confirm that they do what they appear to do, which is postpone because of COVID. You can't confirm that?
So I see my time is about up, Your Honor. May I finish answering your question?
Yes, you may. Uh-huh.
Thank you, Your Honor. So trying to see if I understand you properly, Your Honor. Is your question that that they were not able to post. They had to postpone it due to COVID.
Yeah, each of the postponement letters, rescheduling letters, whatever you want to call them, says something about COVID and the encouragement of all claimants to use virtual telehearings.
Right. So that doesn't, again, in itself indicate where that was, that occurred.
Why don't the postponement letters say why the postponement is happening then?
I don't know, Your Honor. And again, the record is unclear as to why the hearing was repeatedly rescheduled, with the exception of the report of general information in which Mr. Spiner indicated that he didn't get the notification for the October hearing that was scheduled. But then, of course, he attended that hearing.
And each of these notice letters includes this odd language that the veteran could submit evidence at his hearing or within a 90-day window following the scheduled hearing date, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We would disagree that it's odd language. I think when there's an entire paragraph that it uses the term scheduled hearing date, but the first sentence is in the context of the hearing that is held, and then the next sentence addresses if a veteran withdraws, and then the final sentence addresses if a veteran does not make the hearing and it is not rescheduled, then they may submit it within 90 days of the scheduled hearing date. So
the scheduled hearing date language appears in the first sentence too, not just the withdrawal sentence.
And it does, but I think first we read that term in the context of the overall sentence, which is a reference to the actual hearing that was held. And then, of course, here the hearing was held. And so
if that's the way the sentence was intended to read, it would just say within 90 days following the hearing, not the scheduled hearing date.
I agree, Your Honor. That would have been a clearer way of indicating that.
And doesn't the board member here confuse the issue a little more by concluding, and this is the part that the veteran is asked whether he understands, by concluding with a soliloquy about the advisability of the veteran getting a new medical opinion from an oncologist connecting esophageal cancer to contaminated water. And he has 90 days to do that.
So is there the issue that the board is kind of conflating the two issues?
Right. That takes the focus off of 90 days to resubmit the evidence I already have and onto this other evidentiary development.
I think the board plainly addressed both, Your Honor. And to the extent that it's a factual finding, the decision on appeal, the board described that the veteran was informed of the need to resubmit the evidence. So we would disagree that it was the board was somehow maybe confusing Mr. Spiner with its comments and discussion. Are there any further questions?
Judge Greenberg, no further questions?
I have none.
Okay. And Judge Jakewith?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Well,
thank you, Mr. Carey. And
thank
Mr.
You.
Pollard, you may move on to rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I would like to first address the Secretary's use of the term submit. And he states that reflects congressional intent to not have any other evidence introduced except for at a hearing or however they would like to interpret that. However, the main issue here is not about when evidence is submitted. It's about how evidence is submitted and whether that process that occurred at the hearing constitutes that submission at the hearing. To resolve this issue, the relevant question is, did Congress intend to limit how a claimant may submit that evidence? Appellant submits that it does not. Section 7113B does not contain any language that expressly restricts how a claimant may submit evidence at a hearing. Because Congress did not define that term submit, statutory laws of construction require that you use the common definitions, and the common definitions that we stated were to present or propose to another for review, consideration, or decision. That's the Merriam-Webster definition. According to the Ballantine Law Dictionary definition, submit means referring a matter to another for consideration and review. So they expressly use refer in the Law Dictionary of Ballantine. So then that's what occurred here. Appellant sent his evidence to VA 1 week prior in preparation of the hearing so that the hearing officer would have the opportunity to review the evidence that he wants to submit in support of his claim. The board took note of this evidence, discussed the evidence and the contents of it during the hearing, which would qualify at the hearing. So that meets that general requirement of submit. Also, how else would a claimant present evidence for discussion if he was unable to provide the board with access to that evidence for review? Significantly, if Congress intended to restrict the how an appellant can submit evidence at a hearing, it could have used better language, as in transmit. Transmit is defined in the Webster Dictionary as to send or convey from one person or place to another, forward. That is a term that the secretary is kind of assuming here, but that's not in the statute. That the only way evidence can go from a claimant to the board is by physically sending this document from one person or place to another. However, Congress did not use that term transmit. Instead, it used submit. So therefore, that was limited to a physical conveyance of evidence. And that's not within statutory language. Significantly here is Regulation 38 CFR Section 2705. Those are the functions of the presiding member, of which determining whether documentary evidence, testimony, and or argument is relevant or material to the issue or issues being considered and not unduly repetitious. How else would an appellant know if those documents that he or she submits are relevant, material, or duplicative before the board unless they have some way of introducing that evidence prior to the hearing and then at the hearing say, I would like to refer to those documents for your review. And the board member will be aware of those documents and knowledgeable to understand what further evidence would be needed. So therefore, it was not Congress's intent to restrict evidence submission to prohibit a claimant from submitting evidence already in the claims file and that the board has in its possession and discusses and introduces at the hearing just to have a claimant resubmit that evidence all over again to greater records just so there's a narrower reading of a term that actually allows for that introduction of evidence more so than just a physical transmission of documents. So, also, with respect to the gap, there is a gap, but the reading of the word submit will fill that gap. Submit to include evidence that is introduced at the hearing. So that evidence should include evidence that is submitted in preparation of the hearing. Furthermore, as in regards to the supplemental hearing, the supplemental hearing would basically add another evidentiary restriction because you have to meet at a higher standard as opposed to just saying, here, board, here's my evidence and here's what I have right now. I think if I'm not mistaken, that supplemental claim would have a higher regard of a standard there. So basically having to meet the new and material evidence standard. So if the court does not have any further questions.
Judge Greenberg, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you.
Judge Jaquith?
No, thank you, Chief.
Okay, we're ready to close up then. And I thank you both for your arguments. I do want to issue an order from the bench right now, which I referenced earlier, Mr. Carey, this applies to you. If the secretary could get us two pieces of information within 14 days, clarify whether Mr. Spiner had a telehearing that was completely off-site in October 2021, so that he was not at the Columbia VARO, or was it a video conference hearing where he was on site? That is the first item. The second item is, did Mr. Spiner not appear at the scheduled August 2021 hearing? Or did VA cancel that hearing due to COVID or take some other measure to cancel that hearing? So within 14 days, we would like answers to those questions. The case is submitted for consideration and the court is adjourned.
The court is in recess.